Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Fred Monroe. Glad you're with us today. And of course, a lot of you who are listening on a regular basis are aware that this is community radio, of course, and therefore part of the community we believe is you. And this is a call-in program that's available to you. We're going to talk today about a fascinating program called Drug Court. No, it's not a court that uses drugs. It's a court that addresses the issue of drugs. And we want you to be part of this discussion if you'd like. The phone number is 805-781-3875. That's 781-3875. And this is community-sponsored radio. This is public radio. And this is your radio station for the Central Coast, KCBX. This is Central Coast Voices, and I'm glad you're with us today. The goal of Central Coast Voices is really to provide you with credible, valid information and insights about diverse members of our community and things that are happening. We want to address how today's choices affect tomorrow's community and how we look at the long-term ramifications of change in our society and things going on. So therefore, talking about drug court today is really talking about ramifications of changes in the way we look at things. Want to remind you, as a lot of you are aware, but I'll remind you every time I do this, that Action for Healthy Communities is one of the sponsors of this program, along with KCBX Public Radio, and that we put out through Action for Healthy Communities a report every 3 years. The last report came out about a year ago called Vital Signs, Understanding San Luis Obispo County. You can read the entire report at actionslo.org or download it. It's about 300-plus pages of data about what's going on in our communities, what people are looking at, from homeless issues to housing, to water, to economic issues and education, and it's available for you to take a look at and learn more about our Central Coast community. We're working on the report that will be out again in about a year and a half of current data, but this report is available to you for download. There is no charge. Today's topic is fascinating. I will tell you that this is a topic that I wish I could say I knew about it when it started about 25 years ago. I didn't know about it then. I found out about it because one of our guests today, who's Clark Guest, actually a guest named Clark Guest, and I realize that sounds somewhat redundant, so we'll try and work that out to flow a little better. Sorry about that, Clark. He's the program supervisor for the San Luis Obispo County Behavioral Health Program for Drug and Alcohol Services. And he has brought with him today Sean Katz and Gina Rufino. Oh, I left the O off here. I'm sorry about that. Okay. Anyway. And they are alumni of the program, and Clark is the program supervisor, and Clark is also an alumni of the program. For those of you who missed the great joy in his life that actually got quite a bit of news coverage, is back in April of last year, he received a full pardon for his drug charges, and he'll explain that in more detail, from the governor of California. So probably one of the best examples of an incredibly successful program is a drug offender who's been through the drug court, who is now the director of the program for San Luis Obispo County. And that's about the best lead-in I can do, and I can't top that. Clark, you want to talk about your history first for this, I guess, is where we can go?
Sure. Thanks, Fred. First thing, I'm really excited to be part of this program and spreading a message about the effectiveness of these programs that we have within the county, and especially this one that touches my heart so greatly, like you had said. And, you know, back in the 90s, 99, when I was arrested my last time, my life had gotten desperate, and had something not intervened in my life, who knows where it would have gone, prison or death. Those were my two options. And so I got in this program, and I've been clean ever since, and graduated, and I was blessed enough to come and become a counselor in the program. And then several years later became the coordinator for adult drug court, and about a year and a half ago was promoted to program supervisor of all addiction treatment programs at Drug and Alcohol Services. But it's also a blessing to be able to pass this on and see families reunited and people reunited with their communities and taking off the streets and not being homeless anymore and just, you know, these treasures of Central Coast that, that happen right and left. Too many times our public, the negativity about addiction comes forward. And I think, you know, and that's because there's, you know, there's not people just sort of waiting around for, you know, Clark, Gina, or Sean to commit crimes again. We're off the grid. And so I think it's nice to have these stories of people that have been able to find success going through programs like this. And both Gina and Sean are, you know, they are giving back in their own right. So the healing and wellness that they've gotten, they are doing that with the community-based resources all across this county. So I'm just really happy to be here.
Well, let's try and focus on what drug court is versus a regular court environment. And I want to give Gina and Sean a chance to talk about their history and how they got here. But I think for starters, we need to make sure that everyone understands how this is different than a regular court environment. I know that it was started by actually some rather conservative judicial people in Miami, Florida, and about 25 years ago, and it's grown from there. But what is the basis of a drug court versus just going to court and basically facing your time in jail?
Well, it was started because the judges kept seeing the same people come over and over again, and they wanted to have some kind of alternative. And it is an intensive level one treatment program with the county where we work in conjunction with the courts and the judge and Judge Michael Duffy, who is the best drug court judge in the nation, and probation, the probation department, and we work so good as a team. And in the past, it was a felony drug court, and but with the new Prop 47, we went in and rewrote it, and now it is a felony misdemeanor drug court. So people, they get in trouble, not just drug charges. They can, you know, have possession of stolen property or burglaries or anything that they are doing to support the desperation of the disease of addiction. And instead of just either locking them up and, you know, for the maximum minimums that they used to do for years and years, they give them a chance at treatment with a team that works with probation, further community supervision, and the judge. And they go into court every so often and check in with the drug court judge. Now, adult drug court, like I said, is our probably most intensive level one treatment program, because they at first come 5 days a week for an hour each day, and they go and see the judge every Friday. And if they're doing well, then they're going to get plenty of incentives. If they're not doing well, then they're going to get what we call a nudge from the judge. And that can be, you know, all kinds of different things, including maybe a weekend in jail. And for the addict, you got to understand is addiction is a difference in chemical balance in the brain. And some people can have a half a glass of wine and stop, and some people can't. They have a half a glass of wine and just goes and goes and goes. It's not bad. It's just the reality for which some people live by. And we help them accept that reality that they live by so they can even start to have a life. And so we try to be able to shut that door on those substances and the thoughts and behaviors that continue getting them in trouble and involved with the courts.
Yeah, when I was doing research for this program, and we've actually been thinking about doing this program and trying to do this program since the article about your pardon came out. I know you're a very busy guy. It's been difficult for you to find the time to be here. So I'm glad that you could be here to talk about this, and that Sean and Gina can be here too. But one of the things I got from people who are out in the community was, oh, you know, addicts can con anybody, and they can con judges too. So why aren't we just putting them away? Mm-hmm. The interesting thing is one of the other things that I got challenged about was some people who'd been through the drug court program saying, You know, if you think jail is tough, go to drug court. There are people who go to drug court who basically just say, can I just go to jail and do my time because this is way too hard. Mm-hmm. So there's people who think that addicts are just going to con everybody. There are people who think the drug court is too harsh a way to make it work. And there are people who think that the drug court is the easy way out. Mm-hmm. How do you answer those? I mean, those are all diametrically opposed to each other.
Well, the first, and I think it'd be good to get Sean and Gina's, but the first one is you can fool some people for a little bit of the time. Drug court's an 18-month program, and after a while, your true colors will start to come out. And the counselors I have currently right now in drug court, they know what's up as far as the manipulation and the process like that. And eventually their true colors are going to come up in those first 30 days. And the other one, when you were saying it's too tough, it is. There's also research out there that shows that these high-risk, high-needs clients really respond to structure and accountability, and they really respond to it. If there's wiggle room, the person that is substance dependent will find a way to wiggle. And so we try and get rid of some of that wiggle room. And at first, it is a fight when they first come in because, you know, we are standing in the way of their addiction, you know, and they've been able to con and their families and the system and you know, all the way through. And then they come in here and they're finding out, oh, wow. Okay, what's wrong? I can't get away with this, so I'm going to play the victim and point my finger at this program because it's too hard. It's setting me up to fail. I hear that all the time. It's also setting you up for success if you can allow the program to work for you.
Okay. Let me remind you, folks, this is a program we'd like you to participate in if you wish. The phone number is 781-3875. Your comments, your questions, we'd like to share with those with us on the air. 781-3875. This is Central Coast Voices. We're talking about drug court. Gina, we'll start with you if you don't mind. Can you give me some idea of how you got involved in this process and why it's a success for you?
Yes, I will. Thank you, Fred. So I was blessed enough or lucky enough to be sentenced to drug court in 2009, I believe. I'm coming up on 6 years. You know, I've been in and out of problems, in and out of jails and institutions since about 1999.
So you'd say before you were involved in the drug court, you had been sentenced to jail for drug issues before?
Yes, went to prison and to institutions. I would get out of prison, try to go to a rehab, and I would stay clean for a little bit, and then I would go back to doing what I did. I tried back in 2001 or two to get sentenced to drug court. I was in county jail awaiting a violation. I was being sent back to prison on a violation, and I had heard about drug court because I'd heard some people were successful in it, and so I was trying really hard to get it. And at that time, they weren't letting people in to that program that had sales charges, which is of course what I was doing because I was trying to.
You have to basically finance what you're doing.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, a lot of us get involved in sales, and that's what I was in trouble for. And so they weren't allowing people with sales charges in back then. So in 2008, maybe the end of 2007, when I got in trouble again, I had got in touch with, you know, I just wanted to stop. I was about 36 years old. I had done this all my life, and I was ready to try something different. And so rules had changed. I had talked to a probation officer up here at, you know, the county probation, and they were allowing people in with sales charges. And so that's what happened. I was able to come in. For me, I needed structure because having structure is a way for people not used to living life on life's terms, we need structure. And drug court gave me that. And like we were talking about earlier, you can only, like, we're drug addicts. Clark's a drug addict. You can only manipulate a situation for so long before, you know, you can see people that are manipulating. And you can see the people that really want to be there and the people that don't. So Yeah, that's where it started.
So maybe you're better at finding, and people like Clark are better at finding the con artists in this process and short-circuiting them.
Right, and you're getting tested all the time. You're coming to that program 5 days a week, an hour a day. You're going to court every Friday for the first few months, so you can't get away with it for very long.
There's an old saying that says you can fool the fans, but you can't fool the players.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, good point. Sean, why don't you step in here? What is your background and how has this affected you?
Well, when I was about 27 years old, I started doing methamphetamines for the first time. And within 3 years, I had lost my wife, my kids, my home, my job, my vehicle, everything, and wound up on the streets. And then I quickly started to use syringes to inject the drug into my bloodstream and started getting arrested, started going to jail. And you know, one of the first things I realized on the streets is that the drugs was moving everything around me. In order to find somewhere to stay for the night or somewhere to be, it was all dependent upon me having that product on a daily basis. And when I would run out, then I would go sleep under a bridge for days or weeks. I would dig in people's trash cans for food and for cans and bottles to recycle. All my teeth started rotting out of my head from the methamphetamines. And then it seems like sometimes when I would get arrested, it would just be a relief. I didn't have to struggle to survive. I would go to jail for 3 or 4 or 6 months, and then I would get out and I would go right back to the lifestyle that I was living. And I did that for about 8 years until I had lost all touch with reality, and my life had become a nightmare. And I couldn't imagine living the way I was living any longer, but I didn't know how to live any other way. In January of 2012, I got arrested for like the 15th time. And they said, now you're going to go to prison for 3 years. And I said, is there any other options for me? And my public defender said, well, they said you could do drug court, but I don't think that you should. He said, your track record suggests that you should just do your time and go back to the lifestyle that you're living. And I thought, well, you know what?
That strikes me as probably not a real supportive public defender.
Well, my track record was proving that, you know, nothing had worked for me before that. So Clark came out to see me in the county jail, and he said, are you willing to change everything about your life right now? And I said, yeah, I am. And he said, well, what I can offer you through drug court is a blank canvas to paint a new reality on. And he said, no other time in your life will you be given the opportunity to have a judge, probation officers, counselors work with you hand in hand to change the trajectory of your life. So when I was released from jail in April, the end of April 2012, it was the first time I never went on the run. I went and checked in with probation, and I started showing up to the drug court group. And immediately I could tell that I had to be completely transparent. I had to put all my cards on the table. There was no fooling them, like, because the people that start to participate in the program, their life starts to change immediately, and you can see that. There's no faking that. And the ones that aren't getting it, that aren't cooperating with their recovery, they're just stuck, not moving forward. It's really hard in the beginning because we're going from a street life mentality, and in my mind, these were the enemy, the cops and the judges, the probation officers and the counselors. These were the people that were ruining my life. And I had to accept the fact that it was me that was ruining my life and to work hand with hand with these people. And I started to grow exponentially in the program for the first time.
Yeah, I want to interject for a question, moment with a question, because my thought is if you – naive thought, I'll give you that, okay – that if you have been put in jail, so someone at that point has interrupted your addictive process at that point, and you're in jail for in excess of 3 or 4 months, isn't that, to some extent, a detox process?
Yeah, if there wasn't so many drugs in the county jail. It's just as easy to use in jail than when you're out of jail. But the funny thing is when I'm on the streets and I'm under the influence of methamphetamines, my choices are pretty bad. And the situations that I come into, I can blame on my drug use. But when I'm in jail and I do sort of go through a detox moment, you know, for a few months, then when I get out, at that moment I am clean. And the fact that I choose to go right back to that lifestyle, I can't blame that on the drugs. I have to blame that on my own addictive mind and my own way of thinking. And so that's what drug court really gave me the ability to see for myself that it was my personality and my behavior that needed to change. Deciding not to use no matter what was step one. Then you have to go to group every day, court every Friday morning, get a job, start working 32 hours a week. You really have to just dive in. The sense of accountability is the structure. I needed that. I needed that. And it was the first thing that ever helped me change the trajectory of my life, because I thought that I was going to have to live that lifestyle forever. I didn't think that it was possible to come back from that. And what I learned in drug court is that we do recover, and we can find a new way of to live. And within 6 months, I had my license back. After a year clean, I'm moving out of the recovery house. And within 18 months, I'm completing the drug court program and then graduating and then having my probation terminated. It really put me onto a new path that I was able to maintain after drug court.
So how does the process start? Your first time – okay, so Clark's a pivot person for both of you in this program, and you have other counselors. Even you direct the program, but there are people who do similar roles with the clients that you do, Clark. What is the initial reaction, and what happens after you've been visited by somebody from drug court that basically said, "Do you want to do this?" And if you say yes, what happens next? Both of you can jump.
Well, the first thing Clark told me is to just don't get high today. You know, he said, show up to group and just don't get high today. We'll worry about everything else later.
Okay. Let me interject. So the concept to some extent is, let's not talk about tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Don't get high today. Go to group and we'll talk about tomorrow.
Absolutely. Okay. One day at a time is definitely a major theme in our recovery. In the beginning, you're looking for any excuse to go back to the lifestyle that you're living. If your shoelace breaks, if you're late for group, if any, you're looking for any excuse to just go right back to the lifestyle that you were living. And so you just take care of what you need to take care of today. And for the first 6 months, street life is a bit chaotic and hectic, and I was used to that lifestyle. So when I got into recovery, I thought, well, this is going to be boring. You know, this is really going to be boring, and I'm used to a chaotic environment. So I just put my head down and did what I had to do. I went to work. I went to group. I went to 12-step meetings, and I was really surprised within 3 to 6 months how dramatic my life was changing, and that I was finding a new way to live that I didn't. They say give yourself a break and just try this and see. And I'm really, really glad that I did. If I would have just done my time, I would have done 3 years and I would have gotten back out and went right back to the lifestyle that I was
living. So it would have gone on forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Hardy, Gina, I want to jump in with some comments from you, but I want to remind folks that we would really love to have you to be part of this discussion if you'd like to be. The phone number is 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. This is Community Public Radio, KCBX, and we're glad that you're part of the discussion, and we'll continue ours, and if you can join it at any time if you'd like. This is Central Coast Voices, and we're talking about drug court, which is not only a remarkable program, but to say it's fascinating, I think, is an understatement, because it's a way of looking at things that we've not effectively looked at for decades that we're now looking at in better ways. Gina, so the first time you walk in you've been in court before.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
plenty.
Been in court. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. Well. Yeah. It's I want you guys to be able to set your own boundaries, so I'm not jumping over them anymore
right.
than this. Anyway. Okay. And historically, you've been in court with probably a public defender or if somebody could afford an attorney for you as a friend or whatever.
Let me just tell you, Fred. I had to pay for a lawyer this time to be able to get drug court. I did pay a personal lawyer, uh-huh. and because I was a felon. I had prison priors. They don't like to give us chances. You know, mm-hmm. they just don't. And because we've been in the system for so long, so I did pay a lawyer. And he got me drug court. And I am like the gratitude that I have for my life today and just being able to really go through that program and change my life, because, you know, I was under the impression and the thoughts in my head were like, okay, if I'm going to live this lifestyle, like I'd be sitting in a motel room with some friends, you know, selling drugs. And I would be like, okay, if I'm going to live my life this way, then I'm going to need to come to terms with the fact that I'm going to be going in and out of prison for the rest of it. And, you know, drugs is just a symptom of our disease. Yeah. And like, I still, to this day, I'm, you know, I have issues. I'm crazy. My behaviors is what gets me. And so we have to try. That's the hardest part, is trying to change our behaviors and the way we think and, you know, trying to be normal, or so you call
actually,
it.
I have to jump in. And this is a little flip, and I don't mean it to be that way, but mm-hmm. it will be. We all have issues, mm-hmm. even those of us who think we're always normal.
Oh, right.
We have issues because we're never normal.
Right.
But so to some extent, yeah, I understand what you're saying, and drugs makes it worse and more difficult for
right.
you. Maybe part of the issue is accepting the fact that we all have issues and we have to figure out a way to work through
them. Right.
But so you show up in drug court mm-hmm. for the first time.
Okay.
It's a little different environment. You know, the building looks the same, room looks the same. Judge Money, who's doing the drug court, is not just doing drug court. He's doing a lot of other stuff too.
Uh-huh.
So you might have seen him before.
Right.
He's a familiar face.
Yes.
How is this different?
Okay. So I have to give a shout out to my other half, James Stevens, because he went through this program too, and we both pretty much got clean. A little behind, he's a little behind me, but he did get it. We were sitting at our house. He was on parole. We were dealing drugs. I had been getting clean for like 2 days, because I think I had to start drug court 2 days later, and you had to be clean to come into that program and start drug court. And so our house got raided. Parole came in, the cops came in, took him to jail, and the day that I had to start drug court, I basically rolled out of bed and went to court. I mean, I was still under the influence. I still tested dirty, even though I had not used for 4 days. And, you know, my life was a mess. It was a mess. I can remember that first day, and I can remember trying to get, you know, being able to accept phone calls from him and just dealing with all this stress. Like, they've taken him. I have, you know, I have a job that I need to go to, and I just lost that. I don't know.
So what is presented that first day in court?
The first day in court is they call your name, Judge Duffy. Mm-hmm. And I just have to say that he's like the greatest man I've ever met.
Wrong judge.
Money used to be.
Yeah.
Used to be, and now it's Judge Duffy. You just go into court. They give you, they tell you what you're supposed to do. You know, they give you a card that you're supposed to have signed to go to meetings, and you're supposed to find a job and be accountable.
And when are they going to see you again?
The next day. In court, they'll see you the next Friday, but they see you the next day coming in to group, because we had group every day.
So this is sort of Groundhog Day. We're going to see you every day until we're sure you're getting it right.
And if we don't see you, then you have a warrant put out for your arrest.
We get to know them so well. I can see when they're coming down the hallway for group, mm-hmm. whether they're still clean, whether they're having a bad day, whether, you know, what's affecting them, whether they need support, you know, whether we need to have somebody in the community support them. We can tell. We get to know them that well.
Clark and I have gotten into it quite a few times.
Yes.
Because I have a temper. And I don't want to do it his way.
Yeah. Well, that's and that may be a good discussion. Okay.
Yeah.
We won't make you have that discussion now unless you want to.
Okay.
Okay. Actually, we've got Derek from Atascadero on the line. Derek, you wanted to know some nuts and bolts about how the program works. Is that what you were asking about?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, and you're on the air, so go ahead.
Okay, I'm basically an opiate addict, heroin addict, go heroin, oxy, methadone. If I go into something like this, I get physically sick for 1 to 2 weeks. What do I do in a situation like that?
Oh, excuse me, if you do what, you get physically sick?
If I stop taking heroin.
Okay.
I get physically sick. What do I do in that situation? I mean, am I allowed to take methadone?
Derek, we have a Suboxone detox program that we can put you on. And get you into a program that will help you. Right now, heroin is rampant out on the streets. And, you know, you don't have to get in trouble to find treatment. And so we have other options. And even if you are on methadone, we can find a way to work with your treatment provider to get you the help that you need. But, you know, you don't have to – your addiction is going to want to push you out on that island all by yourself. And, you know, I just want you to know that there's people out here that can help you, you know, come off that island and show you another way to live. And, you know, I would welcome you. You know, you're in Atascadero. I'm the supervisor for that Atascadero clinic. I would welcome you to come and talk to me. And, you know, we can find some avenues to help get you the help you need.
Okay.
You know, just, you know, whatever you want to do, my number is 461-6083.
Okay, thank you.
Did you get the number, Derek?
Yeah, I got it.
Okay, all righty.
Okay.
Thank you for the call. Okay. You probably get that a lot.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, it's rather startling to me that the one call we've received so far today is from somebody who basically says, how do I get help?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, because you got to understand that the nature of addiction wants to isolate you from everything that's good in your life. And so it wants to get you on that island to where there's no way off. There's no way off. And so that way it can control your life. And, you know, everybody out there listening today, there's people out there that will help provide you rafts to get out that island. You know, you just have to come and find us and be able to do that. And, you know, with these two here, they, you know, their addiction that, you know, it's had isolated them enough to where they had started to accept that this is the way they were going to live. And, you know, until somebody came out, it was like, that's why I used to love going out to the jail and let them know there's another way to live. That's just their world. You know, I get in, I get clean, I get, have some good meals, I get some good sleep. And as soon as I get out, I'm going to go back to this. We get high, we get caught, we go to jail. We get high, we get caught, we go to jail. And unless you're going to start accepting jail as part of your life, at some point you have to get the necessary tools to stop using.
Yeah. Sean, where are you in the process now? How long ago did you start drug court, and what's the evolution of the process now for you?
Oh, I started about three years ago at the end of April, beginning of May, and it's an 18-month minimum program. You know, and I think that's what makes such a difference between drug court and other programs, because when you just have to go to jail for 3 to 4 months, you can think to yourself, I'll just get through this and then I can go back to the dope. There's other programs even that are only 6 to 9 months long, and you can kind of get through that with getting strikes or, you know, kind of flying under the radar and then go back to what you're doing. But when you start drug court, you have to accept that this is going to be 18 months to 2 years from now. This is what I'm going to be doing. And if you mess up in drug court, you don't get a strike. You start over. You go back to the beginning. There's five phases. So, you know, it's really designed perfectly that in the beginning you go to group every day of the week and court every Friday morning, and you do that for 3 months minimum. At the end of 3 months, you can go into phase two if you've done all the things that you're supposed to have done in phase one, and then you only go 4 days a week and you go to court every other Friday morning, and you do that for 3 months. Phase three, 3 days a week. Phase four, 2 days a week. So by the time you get into phase five, you're going 1 day a week. You're only being tested once a month. You're going to court every 3 months. And they slowly start to let go of your hand, and you slowly start to hold yourself accountable. I remember towards the end, it took me 18 months to go through the program, and then I realized that it wasn't about having to call the color testing line anymore. It wasn't about doing it for anybody else. I was holding myself accountable. So then I completed the program. I graduated in May of last year. And then there's a 6-month aftercare program. And if you successfully complete that, then they'll terminate your probation and reduce your felonies. And that's what I did in June. And so then at the end of this last year, I was voted in as the drug court treasurer for the alumni group. So I continue to go to drug court once a month to the alumni group. And I'm very active in the 12-step community. I secretary a meeting on Saturday nights, and I go to two or three meetings a week. And I've also, you know, Drug Court is what connected me to the community of 12-step programs. And in the beginning, you know, they're really holding you accountable to your progress, that you have to get a sponsor and you have to go to meetings and you have to start working your steps. I was on step 7 about the time that I completed Drug Court. And so after that, I continued to progress on my own and completed the 12 steps. And now I have, for the first time, a sponsee of my own. And that's where I'm about in my recovery right now.
So was when you were accountable on a weekly basis for something you had to show up for, and you shifted into being accountable for something you had to choose to show up for, my suspicion is that was a probably a difficult transition.
You know, it was amazing because I didn't even realize that it happened. You know, Drug Court just, you know, they help you train yourself to live with integrity and a strong work ethic. And you know, it's a lot of people, they feel like they've been sentenced to Drug Court, but it's really a gift. It's really a blessing. Some people are just resistant in the beginning, and I just think, man, you're really just robbing yourself of this opportunity. People that have managed to not do Drug Court, I just think, you know, you've really robbed yourself an opportunity to change everything about your life.
When I was reviewing some of the material that Clark made available to look at the history of this program, I was both surprised to see, and as I thought about it, maybe I shouldn't have been surprised to see it, that there are people who have actually asked to be taken out of the program because they've commented, you know, let me just do my time. It's easier to do my time and get back to my life. You're holding my feet to the fire way too much. I don't know how you address that. When someone who's an addict and is offered an opportunity may say, yeah, just continuing my addiction and my lifestyle is easier. How does the Drug Court address that?
You know, if you don't want to be in Drug Court, you don't have to be. And it's a choice, basically. And you can either choose to go back to jail and keep doing what you were doing or dive in with everything that you have and give the program all that you have. I was 38 years old or 36 years old when I started this program, and I'd spent my whole life a drug addict. So I was ready to change. And if you're not ready, it's not going to happen. And, you know, there was two or three times where there was young girls in their mid-20s, early 20s sometimes, that would just be sitting in group messing around, and you know, I'd call them on their stuff, and because I was ready to change and I thought that they were messing, you know, they're just wasting time here, why are you even here? If you don't want to be here, then just leave. And so I think that I took it really seriously because I was just ready to change. You know, my daughter, I didn't get to see my daughter grow up. You know, now I have a relationship with her. She calls me for advice. I'm a living amends to her daily. And I have a grandson that's 3.5 years old that has never seen me high before. So those are blessings. You know, I was able to, I've bought a house. You know, who would have thought that I could ever buy a house? You know what I mean? I rented rooms and lived in garages, and that's what I did to live. And I'm a homeowner today. So, you know,
In the economy of the last 10 years, it's been hard for a lot of people to be homeowners.
Yes. And I can
who don't have the barriers you've had to work around.
Right. That's admirable. I am blessed. Like, I have no complaints. There's no complaints in my life today. My husband's a wonderful man. I thank God for Drug Court. I really do. And the 12 steps, you know, the 12 steps, I secretary a meeting on Tuesday nights. I go to a couple meetings a week, and I truly feel that. You know, I tried to do it my way for so many years, and that was Gina's will. And so now I've finally given it up to God and done God's will. And so I worked it the way it's written, and it works. It's amazing how that happens.
Well, and even with me, though, the foundation that I built early on when I was in the program, mm-hmm. I still run off of those principles because that's what works for me. And, you know, with addiction, it's sort of, you know, we never know when somebody's ready. We just keep giving them chances. And the key is to try and find the person, the right program at the right time of their life. And if either one of those are off, then we'll see them back, hopefully, if they survive, and we'll try another program at the right time of their life. I mean, I've worked with people that's been in prison for 40 years, and they come out and then finally get
clean. That was 4-0.
4-0, yes. Okay. I used to do a federal program for people that's been in federal prison. And we've had people in drug court that had done 20 years of their life in prison. And you talk about being institutionalized. I mean, that's a whole other culture when you've, you know, done prison time, because people have to turn into a certain person with the prejudices involved to survive in prison. And then they come out and they expect them just to turn a light switch and change. And it's not going to happen, you know. And Gina was talking about some of the anger stuff that she'd had. But that was her nemesis. That was her fuse. That was her trigger that she had to learn how to deal with productively and to stay clean and sober. I was talking to her before the show. She said she's so serene now when it comes to that kind of stuff.
I have my moments.
Yeah, it reminds me of something that Clark used to tell us in group. He said there are people that are serving life sentences or that are dead right now that would do anything to trade places with you, that would do anything for the opportunity to go through the drug court program.
Wow. Yeah. Gina, you brought up something that I also was able to read about in some of the material Clark made available, and that was that one of the key things that seems to happen with people nationwide who are involved in drug court is that family members and friends who stopped trusting you a long time ago find that being part of the drug court builds those bonds back up. That's been a key thing. How old is your daughter, and how old was she when you started drug court?
My daughter is 22 now, almost 23, and I think she was about 17, if I'm 18, 19, 20. Yeah, like 17.
Mm-hmm.
And
probably your most skeptical critic about the possibility of success.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, she gave up on me a long time ago. And it's really
And probably never stopped reminding you that she gave up on you.
Yeah, and it's still and it still happens. You know, she'll joke around, "Oh, I bet this is new for you," when I'm doing something with the baby. "Oh, this is new for you," because it's true. You know, that's the guilty part of my life that will always be there. It's never going to go away. Like, she was growing up for those 17 years, and there's no pictures of me anywhere because I was doing prison terms and running the streets and.
Was she living with at the time?
She was with my mother.
Okay. So where's your mom in this picture as far as what she sees now?
My mom, like, they come to me, like, we have other addicts in our family. You know, it runs in the family. They call me and ask my opinion on things, and she tells me, "You're the only one I don't have to worry about anymore." And, you know, I've never heard that from my family. It was always me. I was always the black sheep. I was always the one they were worried about, or, you know, coming to visit in jail and just everything. My life has completely changed, and it's great.
Yeah, I want to unfortunately shift to some statistics because I think that's important. We talk about this because I think one of the things that happens. I'm surprised that Miami was where this program started, not known for a liberal court system, not known for a liberal community. Do you get a lot of a flack from the people who think this is just a nice touchy-feely liberal way to be soft on crime and to waste money on people who will just be back through the system again?
Well, you said earlier that some people think it's too tough.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I'm not sure if those are people in the outside world or people who are involved in the program too. So it's hard to tell, but you'll expand on that. I'm sure.
Well, it's again, you sort of have to consider the source. If somebody's not ready and they come in the program, and, you know, we've opened it up, like Gina had said, we were giving a lot more people chances and, you know, at this program, because one of the big things for the NADCP was to make drug courts available to as many people as possible.
Surprised to hear there are 3,000 drug courts, 3,000 plus drug courts in the United States right now.
Right. And the drug court model from Florida just swept across the United States because At one time, it was one of the most researched programs in the nation because of the federal dollars that have gone to it. And now there's drug courts for everything. Like ours is adult drug court. Just in the county here, we have adult drug court, veterans drug court, which I sat on that board for 18 months helping to create that. We have family treatment court. We have juvenile drug court. We have behavioral health treatment court collaboration. And then other drug courts in the nation are DWI courts, federal district drug courts, reentry court, reentry drug court, tribal healing for wellness court, and back on track treatment responsibility and accountability on campus. And the drug court model works for a lot of things we do. I've helped develop some programs lately that are really successful now, AB 109 being one of them, that is on the drug court model without a judge, but we work as a team with probation, and the officers are great because this model works, and the research is out there that shows that these high-risk, high-needs clients need accountability and structure. And actually, if you can get through that initial breaking in process, they exceed at that. Mm-hmm. They exceed at that structure. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's you know, they're good at this, you know.
Well, one of the things that was interesting, too, that I think for those who might object to it or think it's an easy way out, when I was looking at a synopsis of the original program in Miami, the year after they started in Miami, the numbers I saw was that the average incarceration cost for an addict in Miami was $17,000 a year. The average cost to run the drug court program was under $1,000 a year. So I guess people who think the liberals are spending too much money may be surprised that this is actually a fiscally conservative way in which to spend dollars on court process.
How much has the county saved with us three sitting here by us stepping out of the system, you know, with going back to jail, incarceration, going back and forth to court, attorney's fees, whatever we would have done to a society to keep our addiction going, our families. There's an intergenerational nature of this addiction that will continue to give with your families. How powerful that somebody can stop that generational nature and be able to affect generations to come. You know, I mean, it does save money. I mean, the NADCP says for every dollar invested in drug courts, it saves taxpayers as much as $3.36. And the cool thing, it is a tough program. I mean, we have about average 50% that complete it. But the amazing statistic is nationwide, 75% of the people that complete it stay crime-free for 2 years afterwards, arrest-free for 2 years afterwards. That's amazing when you're talking with addiction.
Yeah, because I don't know if you have the numbers or not, but I suspect that the recidivism for people who don't go through this some kind of process like this is very, very high.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well,
and actually, the three of you sitting in the room have implied that you didn't take this path the first time through the road.
Right. Yeah, from the very first time I got arrested at age 30, I was reincarcerated within 6 months from that time every year. I would not be out of jail for more than 4 to 6 months, back in jail again for over 8 years. And now it's been 3 years since I've used or gone to jail.
And incarceration in the state of California is more than $20,000 to $25,000 per year, even on an efficient jail system. So that's very, very expensive. We don't have a whole lot of time left. Clark, I'd like to I'm fascinated by your transition from this process and pre-drug court process in your life to basically being a champion of this program now. How did you make that move? I mean, the move to clean and sober and effective members of the community, I think all three of you are doing very well. Mm-hmm. To be willing to jump in and say, okay, I'm going to stick my neck out and defend this program and be I want to be careful using the word. You're a crusader for the program, and sometimes that's a bad connotation, but I see it as a good connotation here.
Yeah, I can wear that badge. Okay. You know, at 40, you know, I got – clean at 38, and then at 40, I was looking. I was did concrete. I was 6'4" doing concrete. It's not very smart, which is the entire my whole life has been, you know, trying to find analysis like that. But I was trying to figure out a career that I could do the rest of my life, and somebody has suggested that I go back to school and become a counselor. So I did. I went back to school, and at first my brain didn't work too well. I mean, I would read one paragraph over and over and over again and could not learn anything. And I started volunteering at the place, the nonprofit that I got clean at. And after a while, they hired me. And so I kept going to school and was started being a counselor. In those early days, I was not a very experienced counselor. I was experienced at being in group as a client, but not as a counselor. But I wanted to be – I had found my calling. I wanted to be the best counselor I could be and help others, you know, try to step away from this destructive nature of addiction. And, you know, it's just been sort of a blessing because – you know, like I said, there's people, they come to me years later, have been doing addiction treatment for almost 13 years now, and there's people that come with their families and their husbands and their grandkids, and it's all about being clean. It's all about this, the disease has no power over them anymore. You know, now, remember, I told you that they have a difference in brain chemistry, so that never goes away. Mm-hmm. So understanding that reality for which we live by, we have to work really hard not to open that door again, mm-hmm. you know. And so that's the important thing to remember. You know, this disease, we still have that difference in brain chemistry, but as long as we don't pick up, we don't open that door, and we can have a life.
I admire you for doing that. Thank you.
Thank you.
We've only got a couple minutes left. I want to just interject one thing specifically for our listeners, and that is there's a website, NADCP.org, and we'll have a link to it on the synopsis for this show also. I would encourage you to go to that website. You can go beyond the first page of the site if you want to, but look at the 15-minute video about the beginning of this program. It'll open your eyes a lot as to why this is effective and why it's remarkable that a lot of rather conservative judicial people have said this is the way we need to really focus. And I think that's very important. Gina and Sean, I want to give you a minute or so to each to kind of wrap up. What would you like people to think about and pay attention to if they have any skepticism about this program or lack of understanding?
I just would want to tell them that this is, you know, this is the only thing that worked for me. You know, I've done three other programs before this, and drug court was the first thing that ever worked for me due to the structure of it, due to being accountable 5 days a week for so long. It's the best thing that ever happened in my life. And, you know, Clark was a great counselor, is a great man. Judge Duffy is a great man. Like, I talk to him, and being able to talk to a judge without feeling like you're going to be in trouble all the time, that's a really cool feeling. You know, the obsession to use drugs has been lifted from my life. That doesn't mean that I don't think about it. It doesn't mean that I don't reminisce about it, but the obsession has been lifted to use.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. Well, I'd just like to say that, you know, drug court came into my life at a really crucial moment because when Clark came out to the jail to meet with me, it was the first time that I felt like somebody believed in me. And I also felt like somebody was giving me permission to believe in myself. And so if it wasn't for drug court, I don't think I would have ever broken the destructive pattern that my life was taking.
And do people still have skepticism about your ability to succeed on this?
No, not really. Not really. That's when good. I came down to South County from North County to get into recovery, sometimes when people show up in South County from North County, they just are amazed. They cannot believe the transformation that my life had taken. And so, drug court works.
It's an amazing program. By the way, when I gave you the NADCP, I believe I forgot the .org part of that. So please go to the NADCP. ddcp.org. Spend 15 minutes watching a remarkable video. It'll change your view on how we effectively deal with people and break the cycle of drugs in our town. So it's really, really something that's important to pay attention to. Clark, what do you have for people like Derek? By the way, for those of you who may not listen to the whole program, Derek called in and basically said that he's a heroin user and wants to find out how to break the cycle. So what do you say to people like that?
Well, we saw the need in this county specifically for that, but also for any kind of detox. And so through the Board of Supervisors, we've been able to create a detox team that can respond to his needs and actually go to his house and help him with that detox and get him in some treatment so we can actually stop that cycle. It's tough to go from one side of the addiction to the other side of the addiction without some help. You know, people will try and detox themselves all the time. The meth users will sleep for 2 weeks, but they get up, somebody comes over. It's just hard to do it without support. And, you know, I've been there. I think Gina and Sean will tell you that they've really been there. It's one of the hardest things that we've done. And, you know, I'm 6'4", 260. I did not want to get help for anything. I could do anything myself. This is one area of my life that I really needed to get help for. But just realize that the disease of addiction wants to push you away from everything that's good in your life. And if you can step in and get set with our detox program, you can come to any of the clinics and ask them about the detox program. You can give me a call at 461-6083. I will help walk you through that myself because somebody cared enough about me to help walk me through.
I appreciate that you do this. I appreciate the fact that I believe people like Sean and Gina probably pay better attention to someone like you because you've been there as opposed to just one more bureaucrat that's telling them they've got a good answer for something, and I appreciate you being part of that. Derek, make the phone call. This has been Central Coast Voices. This is a topic that I just have found incredible to talk about, and I'm glad that these folks have been here. I want to thank all of you for being willing to stick your neck out. I mean, you've basically said your names and had your voices heard on a radio station that people listen to. And I appreciate the fact that you've been part of that. This has been Central Coast Voices. This is a production for Action for Healthy Communities. If you haven't been paying attention, we've been talking about Drug Court, which I think is an incredible program, and I'm thankful to my guests today. The Action for Healthy Communities program is really a way to look at our community and get a better understanding of what's going on, which is one reason why we support and produce Central Coast Voices. Next week, Chris Kington Barker will be looking at the health of our oceans, and she will have guests from Cal Poly and from UC Santa Barbara looking at the issues of our oceans and how it's affecting climate change, and climate change is affecting those, along with industrialization, overfishing, and marine ecosystems and problems generally. This is Central Coast Voices. You can contact us at voices@kcbx.org. You can also call us at 543-2323. This program is supported by KCBX Public Radio in conjunction with Action for Healthy Communities. We also want to thank Joan Gillart Sargent, who is our underwriter for this program, and we appreciate her support. And thank you to my guests, Clark Guest, Sean Katz, and Gina Ruffino. I appreciate you being here today. Thank you very much.
Thanks
for having us.